You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've just been listening to the Hot Texas Swing Band and their rendition of Hot Texas.
Yes, Alex Storma and the Hot Texas Swing Band. And, you know, Jim, we're coming up. This is episode 191, and we are so happy that you are with us tonight. We're just a couple days away from our America 250.
That's right.
250th birthday. Isn't that fun?
Yeah, I think it might be a bigger event maybe than Taylor Swift and Mr. Kelsey.
Gosh, and we have a very special show for tonight that will touch on some America 4th music or poetry or I don't know. We're going to know when we play it. So we have a really fun show. We're going to bring on our guests. We have a full house. Jim, who is joining us tonight?
First, we have Henry C. Park.
Henry C. Park.
West Magazine.
And
the greatest lessons ever made.
Yes, film historian. And Henry, welcome.
Thank you.
Henry, where are you joining us from tonight?
I am from Van Nuys, California.
All right. Very good. And who's
next? We have Courtney Joyner, famous author, screenwriter.
Film historian.
Filmmaker.
One of our favorite writers.
Talking heads.
Oh, gosh.
All of these. And yeah. Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. I don't have that copy, Henry, of that book anymore. I don't know. I went looking for it the other day. Yeah. I have to get that book. Anyway. And who else? We have another major guest.
Cindy Mission Asbell.
Hey, Cindy. Howdy.
And we're going to be calling her Cindy.
Cindy Mitchell.
And we have this great book here that we're going to be talking about.
Oh, my gosh. What a read. We're going to get to it shortly. Cindy, where are you joining us from tonight?
Grass Valley, California, up in the Sierra foothills.
Yes, yes, yes. So, let's see. We're all California tonight, except for us.
We're in New Mexico.
Yeah,
we used to be California.
Yeah, we used to be California. We're called New Mexico home now. So let's see, really quickly, Courtney, you were with us a couple of months ago.
Yes.
And what has been going on with you since then? Catch us up.
Oh, gee. Mm. Well, I've been back in the studio doing some commentaries. Gee whiz. What's coming out for me is Them, which I was really happy to do. That's coming out on 4K. Yes, The Giant Ants. And Westerns, Last Train from Gun Hill. And I'm getting ready to do El Dorado. I did The Misfits. Also doing Rio Lobo. And with Henry, we did Red Sun.
Right.
None of this stuff has been Them is out, and I'm getting ready to write a new horror picture for our good friends over at Scream Factory. So that'll be nice, and just trying to stay out of jail.
Yeah. Now you and Henry had birthdays one day apart last week, I think.
Yes.
So
did you do something fun? We'll start with Court first.
No, I sat in my room in the dark and was miserable. I didn't.
You know, sitting in your room in the dark is dangerous.
Henry, what did you do?
Well, I planned to sit in my room in the dark and be miserable, but my wife and daughter messed it up by taking me to Musso's for dinner.
Oh, wow. Good heavens.
Oh, That's a great place to go.
We haven't been in a long time.
No, I know. Yeah. Musso and Frank's, right? We're talking about the same place. Right? Yes. Oh, fabulous place. So Henry is with us the first Thursday of every month, and we are always thrilled that he's able to join us, and he's going to deliver. Henry, why don't you take it away right now? Sure. You're going to talk about Henry's Western Roundup.
That's right. Well, one of the most interesting Western-related stories to come to my attention is that a stage version of High Noon recently trod the boards in London, and its representatives are actively searching for an American venue. Based on the classic 1952 film, which starred Gary Cooper and Grace Kelly, and was written by Carl Foreman and directed by Fred Zinnemann, the stage show opened at the Harold Pinter Theater on December 17, 2025, and ran until March 7, 2026. The story, of course, is about lawman Will Kane, who, just as he weds his Quaker sweetheart, learns that a man he sent to prison has been freed and is heading for town seeking revenge. I might have been skeptical of a stage play version of a great Western. I was disappointed in the recent play based on The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. But High Noon is the work of first-rate people, and it's had excellent notices. On stage, Will Kane was played by Billy Crudup, who I always think of as the out-of-control rock star in Almost Famous, but he also did fine work on screen in the 1940s-era Western The High-Low Country from Max Evans's acclaimed novel, which was directed by Stephen Frears and produced by Martin Scorsese. Now, in High Noon, the Grace Kelly character was played by Denise Gao, who has most recently starred in the Star Wars spin-off series Andor. The script is the first play by screenwriter Eric Roth, who won an Oscar for Forrest Gump and has had 7 nominations.
Oh, wow.
The director, Thea Sharrock, has directed film and TV as well as stage, and she became the youngest artistic director in British theater when she became artistic director of London's Southwark Playhouse at age 24. Tomorrow, I'm going to update the current Henry's Western Roundup to include the High Noon information, and I'm including links to a couple of English teaser trailers for the play. And one person who leaves the theater singing its praises is Pierce Brosnan. Now, on the INSP network, Blue Ridge, the contemporary rural police drama, returns for a second season beginning on Sunday, July 19 at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. If you haven't seen it yet, its setting is a rural community in the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, where it is also shot. And the town sheriff is Justin Wise, a former Green Beret who's returned to help raise his daughter and maybe get back together with his ex-wife. It's realistic without getting sordid and convincingly small town. For instance, the police station got burned down in season one, so the new station is crammed into a section of the local historical museum. They're doing police work around stuffed bears and things. Jonathan Scheck stars. He's done several Westerns, but is best known for the Tom Hanks film, That Thing You Do, playing the arrogant lead singer of The Wonders. In the upcoming roundup, I'll have an interview with Jonathan Scheck, series creator Gary Wheeler, and a guest star in the final episode of season two, Keith Carradine. Now, Dead Souls, True West's Reader's Choice for Best Western Movie of the Year, is playing in art houses now in film festivals around the country, so keep your eyes peeled for that. Also, please check out the July-August True West with a cover story about when Waylon and Willie saved the country. In my column, I look at the Westerns made by those outlaws of country music, Waylon and Willie and Chris and Johnny Cash. And you can read all about this and so much more at henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Oh, thank you, Henry.
Yay. You.
Let's see. Okay, Cindy.
Yes.
Hello, Cindy. Cindy's hello, been waiting, waiting patiently.
Here's the book.
Oh, my goodness. So let's see. Yes, okay. I had to just quickly look at, I'm so excited. I don't even, I'm really kind of like, don't know what I'm doing.
I want to talk a little bit about the book.
Yes, yes. Okay. So Cindy, right? Yeah, so Cindy, before we take our first break, we want to have you tell us a little bit about the book that we're going to be talking about tonight. And Henry and Court, I want you to just jump right in. You just, you have a question, you just comment, just jump right in because you both read it as well. Jim's holding it up to the camera. So, Cindy, tell us about this amazingly entertaining book.
Well, my father released the book in 1989, and it's been available, obviously used, on Amazon and on various sundry places. And the price range was just phenomenal. It could be $40, it could be $4,000, depending. And I thought that was just outrageous. So I wanted to reprint it, but the problem was we didn't know where the galleys were. And there's over almost 400 pictures in the book. So until technology or something else could happen, we wouldn't print it. We didn't want it to be all pixelated and look horrible. And by the grace of God, the man who first got my father, Mick Martin, who was the film critic for the San Francisco Chronicle, to write the book, got in touch with me, and he had contacted the original publisher who still had the galleys. So we went to San Francisco. He graciously gave them to us, and we were able to reprint the book. And while that was all in process, Mick passed away. So I'm glad that we were able to do that once again. But we've reprinted it with Henry Gray Publishing, and we've made it a little bit bigger. We have a different cover on it. All the pictures that are on the front cover are actually family photographs. As I said when I spoke with you before, the little ship that's on there is the ship that my grandmother came from Norway to the United States in. So they're all very sentimental pictures to the family. So that's real family stuff in there. It's the true story. It's a love story between the two brothers. It's not your typical Hollywood kiss and tell. And it's not a dry memoir either, of walking down the street and this happened. My father wrote it as if he was just randomly at a party telling stories. But the struggles and survivals and the dependency and the loyalty and the fierce protection of the two brothers together is what is exemplified in the book.
Yeah, we couldn't put it down. And
well, there's a million stories in here. You can start on any page and start reading.
Yeah.
What a riot with these guys. And I want to tell you right now, what a left hook John Musa had. He's going to be in a contender.
You didn't want him to be riled up with you. That was for sure.
No. Okay, Henry and Court, I know you've both gotten into this book. So, Henry, why don't you give us a little teaser about it, how what you think, having read it?
Oh, well, I find it absolutely fascinating. What really struck me was that it isn't what you think of as a Hollywood biography at all. If the book ended before either brother got to L.A., it would still be a great book because it's a wonderful document about the day-to-day life of kids growing up during the Depression and the, you know, rough times that they had and how they triumphed over them. Just fascinating stuff.
Courtney?
Well, also, I think the thing is with the book that's really great, I mean, what Henry's correct, because it's almost in two parts. And then once the Hollywood part starts, this is Hollywood in the 30s. This was not easy. And of course, your Uncle Bob, you know, with the Hopalong Cassidys and the B-movie period, which lasted, you know, quite a while and slowly. I mean, there was never, I would say, for either your dad or your uncle, a lightning strike that suddenly they were, you know, born full flower to the movies. Because by the time, like, your uncle was under contract to RKO, he had a lot of miles behind him.
He was the first actor ever to make $1 million in 1 year. And he was under contract with Howard Hughes, and he did 29 movies that year. And at one point, Howard had him doing three films at once, and he would shoot one show, he'd be helicoptered to the next set, change, and then when he was done with that, go and do the third one. So they were definitely trailblazers.
Blazed
the trail that nobody else has dared follow.
Yep.
So,
and yet,
go ahead. No, go ahead.
Going to say that it was amazing for them compiling that, Robert compiling that incredible list of credits when, as you say, neither brother really set out to be an actor at all.
No, not at all. That was not their goal at all. It just was their fate, is what they were supposed to do. And thank goodness. Bob got to Long Beach. My oldest aunt left home at 12 to join a vaudeville dance team. And at 15, she married a sailor who got stationed in Long Beach. And when the Depression hit and the family literally lost the farm in Delaware, she said, "Don't stay on the East Coast, come to California." So my grandmother had remarried, and her husband and their new baby loaded up the car like the Beverly Hillbillies, and they drove, but there wasn't room in the car for Dad and Bob. So Dad was 14, Bob was 16, and my grandmother gave each of them a handkerchief and a clean pair of socks. And that's all that they had to go from Delaware all the way to California at 14 and 16. And when they got there, my aunt had joined the Long Beach Players Guild, and she enticed Uncle Bob to join. And that's, as you know, Courtney, that's where he was discovered for the Hop-Along.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
They had no desire to do that. My father was so enthralled with learning, and he wanted to be an opera singer. He wanted to be a sailor. He wanted to be, you know, a snake wrangler. He wanted it all.
So, you know, your grandmother.
My grandmother,
did she want to toughen them up, or she just want to get rid of them?
Well, no, they're just, it was the beginning of the Depression, and there was no room in the car for them.
Yeah.
So I could, Uncle Bob had already run off before, and Dad said something later on in life. He said, "I never understood why Bob kept running away. And then I realized he was running towards something," which I think is a brilliant observation.
Yeah. Before we take our first break, I'd like you to just say, tell us, how did they get known as the Ornery Boys?
They were born in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and their grandfather, who was a Norwegian sea captain, had a farm in Rising Sun, Delaware. And they got to be a little bit too much for my grandmother, who was a widow. My grandfather was actually tragically killed before Dad was born, so he never got to meet his father. So she shipped him off to go live with her sister and brother-in-law and her mother on the farm. And they were little. They were very little. And they had a different accent, different dialect than Delaware, coming from Connecticut. And they were beaten up. So Dad couldn't fight at all at that point. He was like 5-6 years old. So he went to his best means and started chewing the armpit of one of his attackers and actually put that kid in the hospital. So four boys jumped on Bob, and Bob reached around and got a metal hole punch and hit one of the kids in the head, and he went in the hospital. So that's where they got the nickname, the Ornery Mitchum Boys.
That left folks started early.
Yeah, that left. we are just having so much fun, and I hope that you are all also having a great time. We're going to slip away for just a moment, and we're going to hear from our sponsors. We are so grateful to them. Are you a writer? Here's a word from our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. And in honor of July 4th, when we come back from this little ad spot, we are going to hear a bit of a track from this wonderful John Mitchum album. And the clip we're going to hear a bit of is America, Why I Love Her. And when we come back, Cindy will tell us about that piece. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
You're invited to join the team. Up your author brand when you team up with Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, specializing in author branding, digital book tours, book reviews, and social media. Experienced, trusted, effective. Get noticed. Visit BlueCottageAgency.com and ClicksByMadison.com. Proud sponsors of Rendezvous with a Writer.
America, why I love her. You ask me why I love her. Give me time and I'll explain. Have you seen a Kansas sunset or an Arizona rain? Have you drifted on a bayou down Louisiana way? Have you seen the cold fog drifting over San Francisco Bay? Have you heard a Bob White calling in the Carolina pines or the bellow of a diesel in the Appalachian mines? Does the call of the Niagara thrill you when you hear her waters roar? Do you look with awe and wonder at her Massachusetts shore where men who braved a hard new world first stepped on Plymouth's rock? Do you think of them when you stroll along a New York City dock? Have you seen a snowflake drifting in the Rockies way up high? Have you seen the sun come blazing down from a bright Nevada sky? Do you hail to the Columbia as she rushes to the sea, or bow your head at Gettysburg at our struggle to be free? Have you seen the mighty Tetons? Have you watched an eagle soar? Have you seen the Mississippi roll along Missouri's shore? Have you felt a chill at Michigan?
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking with Cindy, Courtney, and Henry. And why I love her, Robert DeVal.
Yeah.
You know, putting that out, but tell us about that a little bit. Would you say something about that, Cindy?
Sure. That poem was originally written, and it's the title poem on the only album that John Wayne ever recorded. Dad was actually nominated for a Grammy for writing it. And that came about because Dad was doing Chisholm with Forrest Tucker, who was a dear old friend of his. They did F Troop together and a lot of other things. And Tuck asked Dad to write him a song, so Dad did. And then Tuck said, "What else have you done?" And Dad recited a poem called "Why Are You Marching, Son?" And Tuck said, "Duke's got to hear that." And he took him back to the set, and Wayne was playing chess with my cousin Christopher Mitchum. And Tuck said, "I know you don't like to be interrupted, but you have to hear what Mitch wrote." So Dad recited, "Why Are You Marching, Son?" And John Wayne started to cry. And Forrest Tucker said, "Well, if it means that much to you, do something about it." So he stood up, shook Dad's hand, and said, "I want to do an album of your poetry." So they did. It took 3-4 years to get done because of the lung cancer, but he did it. It sold 100,000 copies the first weekend it was out. And when Dad passed away, Ernest Borgnine and a dear friend of all of ours, A.C. Lyles, took me aside at the pool at Sportsman's Lodge, and they said, "What are you going to do for your father?" And I sort of stumbled and said, "Oh, website?" And they said, "That's not good enough. The country deserves, no, it needs to hear John's poetry." So Ernie said, "I'll tell you what you're going to do, kid. Your dad's friends are each going to pick their favorite poem and record it, and I'll be the first one to do it." So that's how that came about. And that's was Robert DeVal with the Sons of the Pioneers behind him doing America, Why I Love Her. And there's 53 tracks on those two CDs of all these great Western stars that came and asked me to be a part of this, including Jane Russell and Jim Drury and you name it. They're all, LQ and Morgan Woodward, all the people that we love are on there.
Yeah, it's
amazing.
It's a terrific album.
It's amazing to me. All these people are kind of like at your fingertips. It's kind of crazy.
Family.
they were family, yeah. And when you look at Alex Cord is on there, I mean, you know, it was kind of funny. Ernie did the first one, and then Jim Drury wouldn't be outdone by Ernie. So he went to the University of Houston and recorded two pieces and sent those to me. And Dean Smith, who was John Wayne's stuntman and Dale Robertson's stuntman and an Olympic gold medalist, he had a video cameraman come out to his Longhorn Ranch and videotaped him with his trick horse doing the poem Dad wrote to honor stuntmen. And they kept one upping each other. So it was the hardest one to record was Wilford Brimley, not because he didn't want to do it, but he kept moving further and further away from any city. And I finally had to find a mobile recording studio that went 250 miles out of the city to get to his ranch and record him.
Wow. And this is how we met you, Cindy.
Was
through this project. Whenever that was, 2016, 20s.
It took a long time to get it done. And like I said, I think we were done and somebody else would call and say, I heard about this. And I'd go, well, okay. So off we'd go to another recording studio. Yeah. And Leonard Maltin said that there's never been anything of that magnitude ever done before. And there couldn't be ever again because of the caliber of people that are on it.
Yeah. Jim, sure. Do you want to, Jim's going to just tell our watchers and our listeners a little bit about you, Cindy.
Oh.
Just read a little bio about you.
We do have a little bio here. Cindy thought she was growing up in a, quote, normal family. She lived in a, quote, normal family neighborhood in the San Fernando Valley. She went to a, quote, normal public school with friends. She thought it was, quote, normal to see her dad and his friends like James Drewitt, Dan Walker, Robert Fuller on TV, as well as Dad and Uncle Bob when they went to the drive-in. It wasn't until she got a job at an insurance company and her dad said, when are you going to realize you are not normal, that she really noticed. Her father, John Mitchum, was a notable character actor with over 800 TV credits and 60 feature films. Two albums and one which was Grammy nominated. Uncle Bob was film icon Robert Mitchum.
Yeah.
Wow.
What a life you've had, Cindy. You should be writing. Don't you think, gentlemen? Don't you think she has enough to be writing her own memoir?
Absolutely. And Cindy, one thing I wanted to bring up that I think is great. Is you also shine a light on your aunt, who I think is terrific. And of course, co-starred in one of the great horror movies of all time.
She did.
House on Haunted Hill. Absolutely.
I don't know if you saw on my Facebook, she actually had one of the first late night TV shows when it was all live. Unfortunately, it was live, so there's no footage that I can get a hold of. But I have copies of the TV Guide and of the LA Times with the Times and a picture of her. And it was a format that she developed. Uncle Bob wrote the dialogue. She liked to be called a nightclub dame, is what Aunt Julie was. And she would come out with her little piano and do a song or two and then have little cocktail tables around. And that's where the audience sat and the selected guests would be sitting at these cocktail tables, and she would walk around and go up to them and interview them at the table or have them come up to the piano and sing. It was the format to the original Tonight Show.
How about that?
And Uncle Bob wrote all the scripts, and Aunt Julie did all the interviews and the singing.
Oh, wow. My goodness.
I stumped you guys. I feel pretty good about that.
Well, you sure did. I'll tell
you, what years was this, Cindy?
I want to say probably maybe 48, 49.
Right, so the very beginnings of television.
Wow. Yeah. And it was shot in Hollywood.
And I was fudging about what I did for my birthday, but I will tell you this, that yes, I went out and set a little bit of a personal record for alcohol consumption that night, but I order my drinks the way your aunt did, scotch and. I still remember from house, that's all she ever says to
well, Vincent the funny
Price
thing
or whoever it is. She says scotch and they get her a scotch and soda.
But Aunt Julie never drank. That's the funny thing.
Really?
She was a devout Baha'i and she never drank.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is something to know about because in that movie she has like 7 cocktails.
Yeah, no, she never drank a drop. Isn't that funny? Dad and Bob drank enough.
Oh, there you go. Yes.
Yeah. They
had
helped.
It covered.
Yeah, they but Aunt Julie was pretty remarkable. You know, she was living in Scottsdale, and she was in her 90s, and my husband and I went to go visit her, and she told me she lived on Thunderbird. Well, I didn't think, and I didn't realize there was Thunderbird Courts, Thunderbird Lane, Thunderbird Avenue, Thunderbird everything. So it took me forever. There wasn't GPS at that point. I couldn't find her. And she said, well, I'm going to be in the street doing the hula waiting for you. And I was thinking, oh, my God, it's 110, and this 90-year-old lady is going to be dancing in the street. And we got there, and there she was in her 90s below the street.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
You know, I was just going to show Cindy, you remember this picture.
That was Dad's very first picture that he ever did.
Right. I love
without an audition.
Yes. Tell us how he got to be the star of the Prairie.
He was just walking. It's like the Hollywood dream. He was walking down the street and somebody stopped him and said, are you an actor? And he said, no. And they said, do you want to be? And he said, how much does it pay? So they told him and he said, lead the way. So off he went, and he did his first picture.
Wish it was that simple these days, right? Now, Henry, I believe that there is an actress that you were quite taken with.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I have been madly in love as long as I can remember with your, now what is the relationship? Your aunt? Gloria Graham?
Yeah. Aunt by marriage, I guess. Gloria was my father's first wife's sister.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So I have a half sister from Dad and Joy. So Gloria and her mother were very much in my circle, in my world. But my poor half sister is 17 years older than I am, and she was in high school with all of the shenanigans of Uncle Bob being accused of being naked and pouring ketchup on himself, and all of the extracurricular activities that Gloria got into. Mm-hmm. So all the tabloids were just blowing up, and my poor sister was in high school on both sides, her aunt and her uncle.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
He could have been the belle of the ball.
Yeah.
Court, do you have a favorite, film or something favorite of John's or of Bob's?
Well, ours, remember, I knew J. Lee Thompson. And you know what? I'm the story with the eggs, and you can see it in Cape Fear. And it's such an incredible scene and so full of tension. But as you know, Polly Bergen did not know your Uncle Bob was going to do that.
No, not at all.
And he asked for the eggs and they gave it to him. And she had no clue he was going to break them on her chest and rub the egg whites on her. And you can tell she just freaks. It is so effective and so sinister and wonderful. It's just... You know, and I was talking to a friend of mine. Actually, it was Bruce. We were talking about the remake, and you know, that's a good movie. But without the Mitchum power, it doesn't. It has none of it just incredible impact.
My parents didn't let me see that movie, and when it came out, obviously it was in the theater and the drive-in. And they didn't let me go see it. They didn't take me. I had no clue about it. And I didn't see that particular film until after I was married. And I watched it. And I called up Uncle Bob and he answered the phone. I said, you're a creep. And he said, what did I do? I said, you just scared the daylights out of me. I just saw Cape Fear for the first time.
Oh.
And he said, well, I was just doing my job. And I said, well, I'm glad my parents did their job and didn't let me see it because I never would have, you know, hugged you, kissed you, sat on your lap, done all the normal stuff.
Oh, I got it. That's a lot of impact. Yes.
I am so, you know, I got to see Night of the Hunter, but I didn't, there's no way could I see Cape Fear.
You gonna have a station break?
I thought so.
Well, just let me see.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, my most impressive film that I remember seeing the guys in, but this was just Robert, was Thunder Road. I was 14 when I saw that show. I don't remember too much about it other than he was, you know, he's a bootlegger. But that scene where he's running down the road and they can't catch him because he's got this hopped up car and the cops just can't get him. But up ahead, they don't have a roadblock, but they throw this 2x4 across the road full of nails. And he runs across, he drives the car across that and it just flattens all the tires. Off the road it goes. That's how they get him. But,
yeah.
Well, Kerry Lofton was the stuntman on that show. And there's a story about it in the book about how wonderful he was. But Uncle Bob wrote that melody. He wrote the theme song. And he wrote the lyrics, but he was having trouble with the melody. And my grandmother, the little Norwegian, said, well, how about this lullaby I used to sing to you? And it was, if you take the tempo of Thunder Road and slow it down, that's an old Norwegian melody, lullaby. So Bob took that melody and sped it up for Thunder Road. And Whippoorwill, the song that Keeley Smith sang, Uncle Bob wrote for my Aunt Dottie when he was 16 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, and we went and found that song and listened to it the other day. It's a great song. Yeah, it's a great song.
Yeah.
We're going to step away for just a moment to tell you one of the places that you can order the books of all of our guests tonight, including Cindy's book we're talking about. You hold it up again. Would you hold up the book again? And you can find them all on our Outlish affiliate page on bookshop.org. And Henry's book is there as well. And some of Courtney's books are there as well. So check out that. And let's take a listen to that spot. And then there will be another little cut from the John Mitchum album when we come back. We'll be right back.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shops Bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
This is James Drury reading John Mitchum's interpretation of the Pledge of Allegiance. The Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I pledge allegiance to the flag. What do those words mean to you? To me, they say, thank you, America, for your strength, your courage, and your freedom, which has been a beacon to the world for 200 years, of the United States of America, whose bright stars in 50 states, each bearing its own stamp of individuality. People, 200 million strong, people who have come to her from all corners of the earth. And of the republic for which it stands, a land of laws, with an ingenious system of checks and balances that allows no man to become a tyrant and lets no group prevail, if their power is not tempered with a real concern for the governed. A land where the right of dissent and free speech is jealously guarded, where the ballot box is the sword, and the people its wielder. One nation under God. A land where freedom of worship is a cornerstone of her being. A land graced with temples and churches.
Pledge of Allegiance. Do you have a little bit of a backstory on that, Cindy?
Well, that's on the original John Wayne album, actually. And that's one of the ones that Jim Jury picked to do on his own accord.
Yeah.
And it's very fitting for right now.
It sure is. Yeah, it sure is. Cindy, one question that I have that I want to be sure I'm looking at time and how quickly it's flowing is, why is this book so important? Not just engaging and entertaining, but why is it so important? Why should everybody be reading this?
Because it's the truth of Americana, of these boys went from poverty, the depression, writing. They were hobos. They rode the rails with Woody Guthrie and Will Gear. The struggles and their survival. As I said, they learned how to pick up dialect so that they wouldn't be picked up for vagrancy, which rolled into being very important in their movie careers. But Uncle Bob was actually put on a chain gang when he was 17 and had shackles on his ankles and almost lost his leg to gangrene. It's a story of survival, of determination, of loyalty and love between the two brothers. It's a story of true masculinity, and which, like I keep saying, the world could use a little Mitchum right now, instead of just giving up and going the easy way, to find answers to things and to appreciate the beauty of this country. That's why Dad wrote America, Why I Love Her. It's not political, but he saw things of this country that we could only dream of seeing.
I know I can't believe what time it is already. So let's see. Courtney, do you have is there a favorite film that you would just say, everybody, you need to go and watch that film?
Yes. Cindy, I'd say for your dad, I think he just tremendous in The Outlaw Josie Wales. And for your uncle, The Friends of Eddie Coyle.
Henry?
I have to echo Court's comments on The Outlaw Josie Wales for John. It's such a wonderful performance. But my gosh, for Robert, there are so many between Out of the Past and The Yakuza and The River of No Return. I'll stop right there. Those are three absolute great ones.
Cindy, do you have a favorite?
I was pursued, really impressed me with Uncle Bob.
Yes.
I that one really took me by surprise. The older I get and the more I see his work, I'm like, oh, God, I didn't know he did that. And with Dad, Josie Wales was pretty darn good. I was with him at Western Costuming, and when they brought out that big buffalo robe, I about fell off the bench laughing. I thought, this man has a 22-inch neck, and you're putting a buffalo robe on top of him? You know? Paint Your Wagon as the Mormon was pretty good. He had fun with that one.
Yes.
His all-time favorite line was in High Plains Drifter, when he came out as the sheriff, and they said he was giving them the ticket back to his little hotel, and they said, we had three good horses. And Dad said, what do you think you've been eating the last 6 months? That was Dad's favorite line.
Well, you know, Cindy, one thing, a little film history lesson for you. Pursued is the model and the inspiration for Once Upon a Time in the West.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Totally. That was the movie that Sergio Leone told the screenwriters to watch before they started the script.
Oh, and you had something you wanted to say about Dan Curtis.
Oh, Dan Curtis?
Yeah. Jim had something.
It's hard. We're running out of time.
I know.
But, you know, Dan Curtis is a famous guy. He's not with us anymore, but he did The Winds of War. He created that. And he wasn't sure he wanted Robert for the part. He thought he was too old. and he invited him to lunch, and he saw him walking, and he thought, he's perfect. He's exactly what I want.
Sorry to interrupt, but the Uncle Bob slipped on some ice at the beginning of that, and for 18 months he did that shoot with all those salutes with a broken collarbone.
Wow. I just would also say, regarding Dan Curtis, he created earlier Dark Shadows. And we're going to have the Dark Shadows people on it next week.
Yeah, next week.
It's the 60th anniversary of the show.
Yeah. And
it all ties around, doesn't it?
You know what?
Here, if you want the how circular things are, guys, you bring up Dark Shadows. The original leading man of Dark Shadows was the co-star of Thunder Road, Mitchell Ryan.
Oh my goodness, how fun. Okay, so we had another music thought we could play, but we won't be able to. So, it was a piece with Julie Rogers, Pamelia, and she's going to be with us on Thanksgiving. So we will be sure to be playing that music. So everybody, let's see. Cindy, what do you have coming up next? I know you're making some appearances.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing a book signing at Sideshow Books in Hollywood on the 20th of July. And then I'm going down to Tombstone for the National Day of the Cowboy for 4 days. I'll be down there with Rob Word and with Julie and with Mary Dees Hampton, who is Jimmy Hampton's widow, and Buck Taylor will be there. So I'm doing that. And then I'm going to be doing some other things. They're having a huge celebration in Palm Springs on September 11th. It's a huge gala luncheon honoring Dad and America Why I Love Her. And we're working to get it to be we want it to be our official national poem, and Congress is working with us to make that happen. So I will send you guys all the flyer that they made. It's pretty fabulous. That's going to be at the Aqua Caliente Casino and Resort on September 11th. And Julie and Anita Swift, who is John Wayne's granddaughter, are going to be there with me. And Larry Maurice, who is the MC all the time up in Lone Pine, and Tony Argento, who is a cowboy poet, and Jason Richards, who is Rusty Richards' son. Rusty was the lead tenor for the Sons of the Pioneers. So Jason's going to be singing some of Dad's songs for us, and we're all going to be telling stories and singing songs about the Mitchums down in Palm Springs.
That's fabulous. All right. And Henry, you're with us back next week, and do you have some other things coming up?
It's hard to say. I'm mainly roaming aimlessly. you can find me at True West Magazine. You can find me at Henry's Western Roundup. And also, I write a lot for the INSP blog. So I'm sort of all over. And Cindy, I just want to ask one more quick question, if I could. Is that album available to people now? Because I bet people
hearing
that clip will want it. Where do they get it?
Yeah, it's on our website, johnmitchum.com. Real simple.
Terrific.
And the book is there too. Yeah.
The book is there too. The book's on Amazon. The book's on all the online services. Or you can ask your local bookstore to order it, or through you.
Yeah, there you go. Great. And Courtney, what do you got?
My new book, I wrote the chapter on Richard Matheson's Westerns for a book called Matheson Tennial, celebrating his 100th birthday. This coming out through Head Press. And Anthony Taylor was the editor. And boy, they rounded up every, possible top flight writer they could get. And then threw me in there too.
Wow.
And and it's a spectacular project. So I'm very happy to have contributed to that. And spotlight is Westerns, which a lot of people don't realize he wrote so many of.
Jim, do you have a quote?
Quote.
We're very close to being out of time, but give us your quote.
We can go quickly. This is a quote from a review about the book. So they raised in the rough and tumble streets of early 20th century America, they were the epitome of self-reliant warriors, men who hopped freight trains as teenagers, scrapped their way through the barroom brawls, and stared down Hollywood's golden age with a defiant smirk. unlike today's men who might prioritize therapy sessions over tavern tales, the Mitchells thrive on adventure and adversity, forging their paths with callous hands and iron wills that refuse to bend to society's whims. What sets this book apart is the vivid portrayal of the Mitchell Brothers' generation, a breed of men who measured worth by deeds, not likes and shares.
We are so happy that you were all with us tonight. We're wishing you a very happy 4th of July. We want to say a quick thank you to our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, and to LA Talk Radio's founder, our producer, and our DJ, Sam Hassan. And join us next week when we will have with us Henry Park is back. He's a big Dark Shadows fan. And we will have with us Catherine Lee Scott, John Logan, and of course, as we said, and Henry. We'll be celebrating the 60th anniversary of Dark Shadows. So join us next week. You have a final comment?
As we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing.
We'll keep reading.
We'll keep reading. Bye-bye.
Thank you.